You're listening to the Northern Virginia Business Podcast. My name is Jessica Dubois.
And I'm Derek Wynn. Here, we chronicle the stories of successful business owners and executives who stand out from the crowd.
Whether you're driven by purpose or profit, tune in to learn how these leaders have built successful businesses,
helping to shape the landscape of Northern Virginia.
I was playing football, a pretty good athlete in my area. You recruited some of the smaller schools around Dalton, Tennessee area. Had a recruiter from West Point come into our high school and started talking to me about, you know, the opportunity to play football at West Point. And I remember going home and talking to my father, and he goes, "Let me understand this, right? You go to school for free, you get a job when you graduate, right? And everything's paid for." And I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "How do we start packing your bags right now? Like, that's a good deal. Like, you need to pursue that." And I did. I only applied to West Point. I didn't apply to any other colleges. I was convinced I was going to get in. I had no idea about the nomination process and the congressional stuff. I mean, like, I was so committed to it after I found out more about it that was my sole focus, was to get up there, get accepted to West Point, and play football.
Did you grow up in a smaller town?
Yeah, so a couple of high schools, maybe 100,000 total in the whole county, but yeah, small town in general. It's a town in North Georgia.
I ask this because I remember that being a huge part of our high school too, was once a week there'd be some type of military recruiter in our lunchroom. And for many people, that was kind of their way out. That was the way out of a small town, or their way to develop skills without going in debt for school.
Right. You look in my hometown, we were very fortunate. The jobs were good in the carpet industry, right? But it was in that one skill set, right, in the carpet industry. My father ran his own business. He ran a men's warehouse, privately owned store, like a men's warehouse. I knew I didn't want to work as hard as my father, because he worked 7 days a week in that store. And I'm like, that is not what I want to do. So yeah, school, those opportunities provided an escape, an outlet to other things out there that maybe you've never been exposed to.
Well, let me ask you this too. So how did your transition, so you go North Georgia, high school, West Point, military career. You know, tell us a little bit about that and how that military career maybe helped you to get to where you are today.
Well, I'd say the best thing about the military is it exposes you to people from all over the world, literally. Even at West Point, you know, you're up there and there's people from all over the country, different backgrounds, different religious backgrounds than you. And so you quickly learn that it is a big world out there, right? But at the end of the day, the funny thing is we were all very similar, right? Despite all the different backgrounds we came from, there was kind of this common core of attending the academy, you know, serving in the military. I guess maybe at the academy, your mission is to graduate, right? And you're all working together to graduate. And then when you get into the military, you have the mission of whatever your unit is. And I think as that transition between West Point, which basically is survive and graduate, right? And then the military, which you're focused with your team, is the building the team, building the relationships, and coming together, you know, for that completion of the mission. I think that's what leads to B3, right? We want to work, win that contract, and then our mission then becomes delivering that work, right? So there's kind of a synergy to all those phases.
And I think, you know, looking through the timeline too, I mean, I can't help but wonder how that might have shifted and changed over time. So, I mean, you graduate from West Point, you know, you're in the Army, and then we have the global war on terror start. And you fast forward and you kind of get to the point where, you know, you exit the Army and now you're running a very successful business, right? Not too long after that. Tell me about how those different points impacted your path once you left. Did you find a deeper desire to serve?
That's a great question. I'm in Naval Postgraduate School on the day the first plane crashes into the tower. Literally brushing my teeth. My wife says, "Hey, a plane just hit the tower." I'm like, "Wow, must be bad weather." Same kind of maybe first thought most people had, must be bad weather. We're pushing on the West Coast, not really sure what's happening in New York. And then she goes, and then I sit there and see the second one. I look at my wife, I'm like, the base is going to be closed down. do you have an ID card and everything? Lo and behold, hers has expired. So my wife's ID card was on September 11th in 01. We had to go back to base, go through all the security, and get her a card so we could, you know, move around the area for that. That day, you know, your life changed, right? It went from, you had a focused area of Germany, like I said before, and then Korea for the second time. Now I'm like, wow, my life's going to change, and we're going to go somewhere I never imagined we would go. At that point, I became an acquisition officer where I'm more focused on delivering capabilities than actually, you know, leading soldiers in an artillery unit. I passed that part of my career. What I enjoyed from that point was always trying to solve the hard problem, right? We're trying to defeat improvised explosive devices, right? So we're taking technology over to Iraq and bringing, again, putting that team together, research labs, industry, you know, multiple agencies to solve that problem. And so I guess that's always what called me, was the challenge of solving the problem of delivering capabilities to soldiers in theater. And I had an opportunity to go to Kuwait and Camp Victor in Iraq with team and do that. And there's very few feelings of satisfaction you have. I tell folks, I know that there are people alive today because of what me and my team did, right? And that is so rewarding in of itself that when I got ready to leave the Army, I actually went and taught at Defense Acquisition University, right? Because I wasn't just going to leave that world where I was so happy to be, you know, being in the Pentagon and then down teaching at Defense Acquisition University. You wanted to coach and mentor that next group of acquisition leaders that are going to have the opportunity to go, you know, to do the same thing you did. So that's all those phases all kind of come together, I guess, with building teams and delivering solutions, if you will, to kind of sum it up.
I mean, it seems like what's driven you is this feeling that you need to make an impact or that you can make a difference.
Our family motto was bloom where you're planted, right? Because in the military, you never know exactly where you're going to go, but they're going to send you somewhere. So you got to make the best of where you're at. And I guess that was one of our processes, was to get involved and make an impact on that community and try to make that community better than maybe what it was when we showed up. And by doing that, you're involved and you're giving of yourself. And by giving to the community, you become one with it and integrate with it. And then, you know, you're sad to leave because you put so much of yourself into that community.
How does this lead to you starting B3 Group with Brad? How did that relationship start?
So Brad founded B3 Group in 2008. And what was happening during that time was I wanted to make an impact for cheerleading with Braddock Road Youth Club. We had moved from New Jersey, where there was kind of a rec or house cheer, if you will, here to Fairfax County. And the only cheerleading programs available were All-Star. And so I asked myself, I'm like, how in the world does a young person cheer at high school varsity level if they never have a chance to cheer on the competitive piece outside sideline cheer prior to that? Like, it didn't make any sense to me. And my daughter was cheering, and we were driving to Chantilly from basically George Mason a couple of times a week. And I'm like, I can fix this. I will start my own cheerleading program in Braddock Road Youth Club. And so they loved the idea, but I only had one problem. I had nowhere to practice. And after we worked through the county and everything, lo and behold, Brad Palmer had opened an all-star cheerleading gym because he had experience there. And I was basically his first customer to come in the door. And so that's where our relationship started and how we got to know each other. And reached a point where he entrusted me to come into his business that he had a vision of and help me share his dream of creating a government contracting company here in Northern Virginia. Quite honestly, I thought we were going to start another cheerleading gym. And that was the business that he and I were going to be in, was this all-star cheerleading program. That was my first vision of what I thought I might do as an entrepreneur. And Brad goes, no, I got this other thing. I've been working at the VA, and I think we could start a company over here. He had to convince me to do B3 group. And I'm glad he did. Brad was right. He almost always is on the entrepreneurial side. And so I had an opportunity to become the majority owner of B3 in 2011. And the rest is kind of history.
It's funny too, and I can answer part of that for Jessica, which is I don't think there's anything a father wouldn't do for their daughter, right?
Not at all. Absolutely.
You know, being a girl dad myself.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let me ask part of this too, which is, you know, so you talk about impact, right? So when you start to go into B3 and you're serving the VA, what kind of an impact does B3 have with the VA? And what would the world look like if B3 were not here today?
I think our impact has grown, right? Obviously, we got our foot on the door, basically with customer service inside the acquisition support center at the Department of Veterans Affairs. So this is a help desk for VA employees to get help with applications they were doing with federal acquisitions. So I will tell you, the immediate impact to B3 as a contractor of the VA was the federal acquisition application for how they acquire services. So we were, you know, an immediate impact there, where I had folks, as you close out the end of the fiscal year, right, we're working Saturdays and Sundays to get all that money wrapped up and spent for the VA. So that's our first impact. To here recently, we moved the appeals process for claims of veterans. When you're trying to get a disability rating, we've moved that into a cloud format for faster turns. So now you're having an impact on veterans themselves. We're part of the Cerner team for the electronic health record, right? And now the last piece we're really turning is we're partnering with the VA for digital transformation to help transform the way the VA uses technology to deliver its services, not only to its internal customers, but also to our veterans. So I think when we have a chance to kind of sit back and take a look at this, the B3's impact is going to be a better experience for that veteran to either get seen or treated or get a case, appeals piece. And that's just an amazing journey from that first start to now. We feel like we're part of the VA's overall mission across the whole organization.
Well, I think, you know, I could sense it earlier when you were talking about your career. I mean, I feel like that's something that's got to be important to you, to feel like you're having an impact on fellow veterans.
Right. I mean, it's such an honor to, you know, if you're going to be a government contractor, I tell folks, it can't be a better place for me personally to be impacting our veteran community. Right. And so I take great pride in that and our employees too, right? Because they know, irregardless of where you work at B3, that whole ecosystem of B3, from recruiting to quality to delivery, right? Even winning the work prior to all that. That whole, you're part of it, right? And you should be proud every day that when you clock out at the end of the day, you should feel like you've made an impact on a veteran's life that day. And I think that's a powerful message to our employees. I think they feel that. And again, from a company, it's a great mission. And good to wake up and get excited about doing it. And then when you go to bed, you feel rewarding.
How do you keep that vision alive and that, I guess, your guys' values alive as you continue to grow?
Well, so every new hire orientation, either myself or Brad are home, and they get to see us and they get to hear the B3 story and the why of servant leadership and our core values of integrity and innovation and collaboration. And so they hear it from us. Beth Coyne, my VP of operations, she's built that interview process and that interview ecosystem so that as we bring these folks on from having the right skill set, we have to make sure that they're a good fit to B3. And it's exciting to see the culture build, not only from what Brad and I had visioned, that now I have vice presidents and directors and project managers who have that same vision, and it drives all the way through the organization. It's fun to see, a little scary about how it was going to happen. I'll never forget the first time we had a task order, and it was the help desk up at the VA Academy in Frederick. was the first time we were ever going to have people working for us that weren't in the same building where Brad was delivering services. And we're like, oh my gosh, this is serious. Like, these people are going to represent B3 to the VA and to the customer, and neither Brad nor I were going to be around, right, to kind of shepherd them. So that was that moment of faith and that leap of faith that said, hey, these people have to believe what we believe. We got to make sure they're the right people.
You mentioned leap of faith with the IT help desk. I had the opportunity to interview you for the Moxie Awards last year. And there was a quote that you said that I wrote down, and it was, some people in companies think they are better than what they are. They don't realize their success is based off of a combination of things, things falling in the right place at the right time. We know what we are good at, and we take calculated risks based off of this. And so when you say leap of faith, the first thing I'm thinking of is this calculated risk.
Right. So when you hang around 70-ton tanks in your early years in the military, risk is an important thing. And so I take the risk analysis piece that I learned in the military to everything we do at B3, right? So putting those first employees up at Frederick in that VA academy was risky for us, right? And so the mitigation of that risk was finding people that we felt, you know, shared our values, that would project those values to the customer and would, you know, do as good a job as me or Brad up there, which is, you do have, there's a little bit of faith, a little bit of trust there. But at the same time, I'd also argue that in the military, everybody has a different skill and rank and occupation specialty, and all of those come together for the team. You know, you got a quarterback and a running back and a receiver, but not everybody can play all those, and you have to find that right person to put in that spot and say, okay, this is the best team I can put on the field today with the capabilities I have. And that's kind of what was our approach, is what's the best team we can put up in Frederick? And that's how we looked at it and went through that interview process that way.
Well, if we think about kind of starting with that leap of faith and your growth since then, I think it's been nothing short of extraordinary in terms of how you guys have continued to grow. So talk us through that a little bit if you can. And I want to specifically know, what other kind of steps did you take in that process to get ready for that next level? And at the same time, what challenges did you overcome? Like, where did you fail in that process? Like, where did you take a risk that maybe didn't work out?
Well, I would tell you, any entrepreneur or small business out there, operating cash. You can never have enough operating cash to manage the growth. So our biggest failure was not anticipating that and partnering with the right banking friends, if you will, that understood government contracting growth and would loan us probably money slightly ahead of our need, right? And so that was very humbling, to be excited about adding people to your company and then turn around and be like, oh my gosh, how are we going to pay for them? So the first time we brought on two people, and I went to the bank and I asked to borrow $30,000 to make payroll for about 90 days. And the bank wouldn't loan me the money. So I had to go to my own personal account and my lovely bride of 29 years and say, hey, I need to take money out of our personal savings for this B3 thing, which was a great conversation to have with your wife after you've been in the Army for, you know, 20 years and the paycheck showed up on the 1st and the 15th and you weren't taking any risk with that. And now I'm on the entrepreneurial side where we're taking all the risk. So after a lovely conversation with my wife, we took all the money that I had in my savings and we made that payroll. And then we got invoiced and it all picked up, and lo and behold, it all made sense. Similarly, the first task order we won on T4NG, it was a delivery-based contract. So now it's not just a matter of time between hiring someone, going to the customer, delivering it, and invoicing the customer or invoicing your prime when you sub. Now it was the government's not going to pay you until these deliverable milestones are met. Well, it was a comedy of errors. We couldn't get people onboarded. We didn't have a development platform to develop the tool we were supposed to develop, and on and on and on. And I remember looking at Brad saying, how in the world did we win the most lucrative contract vehicle a veteran-owned small business can win, which is that the Department of Veteran Affairs T4 Next Gen. I mean, it is the driving growth vehicle for us. And on our first task order, we're going to screw the whole thing up, right, and go bankrupt because we can't generate any cash from our customer, right? And I never forget that. I'm like, how do we mess this up? So fortunately, I made friends fast on the banking side. We went in and we laid out what we're doing and all the work we were winning and this, that, and the other. And it was an easy sell to the bank at that point. I say where we were very successful in our growth is Brad and I are always very honest about what we're good at and what we're not good at. And our job was to fire ourselves from a task that was either taking too much of our time or somebody's better than us at doing it. So your inflection point for a small business is over 50, because after 50 people and 50 employees, now you start having federal rules and regulations and all that applied to you. So boom, Beth Coyne shows up because you need a director of human resources, right? Jamie Hoffman shows up as our revenue starts to become greater and you really need someone to manage your financials, right? And then Brad spending his time on the delivery side, trying to find folks that can really deliver and write proposals and be multi-talented. So we always tried to move up the ladder, if you will, in responsibilities by finding somebody better than us to replace us. Brad's the best HR director V3 ever had, and I'm the best finance person we ever had for a while, right? Until we realized we were capable of scaling that, and we needed to get to the right point in the company to be the leader and the manager and the owners and those kinds of things.
So good time to bring this up too. So you talk about investing in the business and having cash on hand and everything else. So with the point you're at today, what kinds of investments are you making to get to the next level?
So the other part of that kind of goes through, like, who's B3, right? And we've kind of zeroed into a digital transformation company. I mentioned the opportunity at the VA is a digital transformation center, DTC. That task order itself is really where we're going to invest and make B3 a digital services firm. Our investment right now is in a digital transformation modernization lab where we can take tools that the VA has and or future tools that customers are talking about and put them into a prototype environment and kind of demonstrate to our customer opportunities for them. So instead of being what I would say a reactive company, which is your typical government contractor, you're waiting on the government to tell you what they need and you get the request a proposal and you write the best proposal anybody in the government's ever seen and you submit it and you win. We're trying to shape more capability out there. And I think our investment in capabilities, that B3 can go approach other federal agencies and have conversations about how we can help them, is a more effective way than just trying to sit around waiting for some opportunity to bid on through a request for proposal process. So that's kind of our investments that we're making. We're making hires with Salesforce leads, ServiceNow leads, those kind of technology platforms, Microsoft Dynamics, so that now we can be thought leaders and have conversations. Again, now I can come to a customer and solve a problem for them rather than waiting for them to tell me what they need and really just filling people in seats that are just kind of turning the crank, if you will. We want to really try to help that customer.
So how does COVID impact these initiatives, like the initiative to be a thought leader and digital transformation?
Pros and cons, right? So the con for COVID is those face-to-face conversations, that walking down the hallway, pulling somebody into a meeting, spontaneous conversations, right? That it just put a kibosh on that. And that's really impacted us. I would say we've worked through that by standing up a group that focuses on this. So now we have deliberate meetings about the technology we're trying to put into our lab. And it's on it's now in the forefront of everybody's thought, but now it's all virtual, right? And those virtual meetings just don't have the same connection. So without having that face-to-face, we're just making it more deliberate on the virtual side.
you know, as you've continued to grow, you have employees in different states. How has it impacted the company culture?
Surprisingly, it's had a very positive impact on us, and it's very counterintuitive. Obviously, the world revolved around our Herndon office, and that's where everybody went to work. But even when that was the case, that was only about 30 to 40% of our workforce. We already had a virtual workforce across the country. So although we love to eat at B3, we're eating on Tuesdays, and we really had this connection point with our employees at the B3 headquarters. But COVID allowed us to understand we weren't making deliberate touch points and connections with those other employees. So now every Tuesday is a corporate video chat for about 20 minutes with myself and Beth Coyne. And we're getting so much positive feedback of how much everybody feels connected to us now. So I like to joke, we're more connected now in the middle of a global pandemic than we were when we were going into the office and we thought everything was good. So again, I think it just makes you think about who you are, what's important. Let folks know, Brad has 3 small children under 6. COVID and schooling is impacting his family, right? We talk about the aspects of mental health for the COVID impact. And, you know, I share my story of my PTSD with our employees because it's real. It's real for all of us now. And we just try to come together, right, as a team and support each other and keep executing our mission to deliver to the VA. So, like you say, the positive impacts of COVID have been interesting. It's brought us together more tightly, collectively, than maybe before.
And since you mentioned it, I mean, if you can talk a little bit about, you know, your story with PTSD, because we are seeing a ton of information on this with COVID that, you know, the mental health aspect is just, you know, overwhelming.
Well, again, for me personally, mine was really coming back from Iraq. Life is consistent in Iraq. Wake up, work out, eat, work out, go to bed. And you have this consistent pattern, and the days were predictable and the days were impactful. And then you come back home and there's a loneliness and there's a, because you're not there, there's a feeling of guilt that you left people there. And it's all these emotions that kind of go through, and anxiety and trying to sleep. And so it's really a coming down from a very high of what you're supposed to do as a soldier in the military to coming back to kind of like reality. And I think just going through that myself, understanding what my highs and lows are, understanding things that trigger, you know, my PTSD and some of my anxiety attacks or depression, those kinds of things. I looked at it, kind of what you laid out, and thought about how disconnected are those folks? How overwhelmed do those parents feel who are trying to work and be a teacher and a mom and a parent and a spouse and take care of an elder, family member, like those pulls and how they may feel like they're all alone with that. And so I think what I tried to share with them is, all of us are part of that, right? And it's not a sign of weakness to have, you know, a bad day and feel overwhelmed or something like that. And we need to talk about it and we need to raise our hand and say, hey, I need some help here. Because if you don't, you get into you get into that spiral of just being disconnected. And so, again, I think sharing that, I think we tried in the veteran community to get people to say, look, it's okay to admit that you're having a bad day or need help with this or want to reach out and talk to someone. And we try to share with our employees the resources that are available to them. And there's plenty of folks that can help you if you just reach out, right? So I think that's what I try to share with our employees. And I keep a focus on it.
I think one of the things you mentioned there and you allude to is kind of mindset, right? So, you know, my closest experience with that is I used to teach high school, and there was a substitute teacher who was a former Vietnam veteran. And you'd ask him, hey, Jim, how's it going today? Every day is a good day, you know, and that was his mindset. And I think a lot's changed since then, too. So it sounds like, I mean, this is a big part of your culture at B3. So what advice would you have for other employers who, you know, want to start to address this?
COVID is impacting your business, whether you believe it is or not. It may not be affecting your bottom line. You may not have lost any contracts, or the opposite, right? You might have had a couple of contracts or de-scopes or whatever. As a business owner, your job is to manage risk, and COVID-19 is a risk. You need to figure out how to mitigate it. It's going to have a long-term impact on your company. The next biggest question you have to ask yourself is, when are we going back to work? How are you going to come back into the work or to the office, right? And so we're having those conversations with our employees and taking surveys, getting their feelings about it. And again, being very transparent in how you're thinking about it as the owner, lay it flat, see what the impacts are, see how much risk you're willing to take, right? And how you can mitigate those risks. And then just be transparent to your employees. Because my thought would be like, I'd say, okay, everybody, let's come into office on 1 January. And you're going to say, how is that going to help me do my job that I've been doing for the last 6 months? You're telling me I'm doing a good job today. I got to come in. How's that helping? Well, like, so you got to kind of work through it and see it on both sides. See it on the side of the employee and see it on the side of the employer.
Let's add in another layer of complexity here with the election coming up. This is going to likely change what government work will look like. Are you planning or leading in any different ways because of the election that's coming up? Like, how does that change how you lead the company?
Well, from just a corporate culture standpoint, we've really encouraged folks to get out and participate in the voting opportunity this year. We encourage folks to take their day of service and possibly go work voting polls, as there's been the COVID-19 impact of maybe some of your older volunteers not being able to participate in the site. So from that standpoint, corporately, we kind of approach this election cycle that way as an opportunity to serve. But from the election standpoint per se, one of the good things about having the Department of Veteran Affairs as your primary customer, not a tremendous amount of change there from administration to administration. And the digital transformation process that we're doing on electronic health records and in our Salesforce, ServiceNow, Microsoft Dynamics, that's kind of agnostic too. I don't see an administration saying, hey, let's stop trying to be better at the VA. Let's stop trying to get more innovation and a better environment for our veteran customers, right? So I think we're very fortunate in that. I do think as you look to diversify into other agencies, you have to be mindful of that impact of potential budgetary cuts in the next budget cycle that could impact your business. And you have to be kind of mindful of that, as it could be a risk or it could be an opportunity.
Well, I often think about it like people, process, technology. How do you effectively do a better job at what you're doing, right? So, you know, if you're running help desk support, you need more people to do a better job, theoretically, right? But do you see this as an opportunity if you're on the tech and integrator side to pick up more work if we're cutting budgets and slashing spending here and there?
In theory, right? So if you assume that the workforce or the demand on that help desk is going to be greater, you do have a choice, right? It either needs more folks in there to take the calls, or you need a better process and technology to help the same amount of people take those calls with artificial intelligence or other type opportunities, right? So I think that's where, to me, that's where I see B3 trying to build capability out so we can go in to that agency and say, I have a little better mousetrap here, right? And I want to show you how my mousetrap can make your process flow better, function better, save some money.
Well, so two things I want to ask on that too as we start to wrap things up. The first one is, you know, growing up in Georgia, living in DC now, and especially Northern Virginia, you know, why do you call this home?
I am a reluctant Northern Virginian, right? So I moved down here, retired from the Pentagon, started the company with Brad. The opportunities are here, right? More importantly, my daughter lives here, so we're going to stick around. I jokingly tell people I used to build, design, test, and deploy weapon systems for the military. Not a lot of people are hiring to do that outside the DMV area, right? It's kind of a unique skill set. So, you know, it's the opportunity here in Northern Virginia. We came down this way for my career. We picked the area because of great school systems. And now, you know, not to be a public service announcer for the state, but it's a good place to live.
And then what about where you see Northern Virginia going? So you talk about driving up and down 95, up and down 66, that changes every day too. How do you see the landscape changing over the next 3 to 5 years, not only for the region, but also maybe you and B3?
We'll continue to stay in the, you know, the Herndon area. I see probably with the headquarters, that's growing out. The Silver Line's coming out there. It's becoming, you know, they're trying to attract younger folks to live in this area so they don't all live in Clarendon. So I think for me, as I see the metro move east-west along 66, I think that's where the growth and the excitement is. I think the workforce will still be here. I will tell you, Loudoun County is a great place to find senior leaders, and we are very fortunate to find director-level folks to take over contracts and accounting and all that. Surprisingly, most of them out here in Loudoun County. The challenge is you've got to go find that younger workforce to come in, your workforce of the future, or you're going to invest. And that's generally somewhere between Tyson's and, you know, Herndon. And so we got to find a way to be close enough to that workforce so the commute isn't difficult, but also allow them to afford the ability to live in that area, right? Not many kids coming out of college buying $800,000 townhomes in Northern Virginia. So I think probably housing is a challenge, that workforce coming in from all the schools around here because the jobs are here.
You make some really good points as one of the youngins who live in Clarendon and who are looking to move out west at some point over the next few years. I can't wait until that metro is all the way built and constructed.
I think it's a fantastic. And now you got easy access to either airport, right? I mean, it just makes decisions about when we can travel again, right? It's simple, right? You know, we are fortunate when I lived in Fairfax, I traveled still a fair amount. I could get to any airport in about half an hour, give or take, right? And the VRE took me into Crystal City, where our office was while the Pentagon was being renovated. So it makes things simple to get around on the transportation. So as long as those hubs are provided, I think that'll help with the growth. It'll help keep the younger people maybe moving a little bit west.
I'm not as young as I used to be, but I live out west now. I just can't wait for 66 to be done. So,
well, Dwight, it's been amazing to talk with you. I do want to give you the opportunity, if people want to follow you, follow B3, what's the best way for them to keep in touch with B3 and everything that you are all doing?
The best place is our LinkedIn feed, the B3 group on LinkedIn. And that's where we really focus on our, you know, our social media messages, our celebration of particular holidays or contract wins. And I think our most important post we had on LinkedIn the other week was, are you awesome? B3 is looking for awesome people to continue to help us with our journey and our story. And we're always looking for awesome folks. And if you're awesome, come take a look at B3. Maybe there's an opportunity for you.
There it is. Thank you so much, Dwight. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. You can listen to this episode and subscribe to future episodes on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to give us that 5-star review so that we can get our podcast out to more and more listeners. If you are a business leader or know of any business leaders that you would like to nominate to be a guest on the show, please visit us at thenovabusinesspodcast.com.